Let's listen in on a live, unscripted second grade Challenger school class. They're studying Charlotte's Web.
What words did this author use to describe this barn?
Descriptive words.
Wonderful. Can you find some adjectives in there?
New is an adjective describing rope.
Rubber is an adjective, and it modifies boots.
Those students are 7. Starting early and starting right makes a real difference. Learn more at challengerschool.com.
Hi, this is Carla from Gracefully Yours Greeting Cards. We are Texas Aggies, but base our publishing headquarters in Austin, Texas. I want to let you in on a little secret about greeting cards and the people that write them. We really have a sense of humor, and we love to encourage others. We talk like we write, with a few words that matter the most, and we try to avoid cliches. You will enjoy sending these popular cards that feature eagles and hummingbirds from Alabama's Larry Martin, along with some of the prettiest flowers. Each unique card says something witty and inspiring. What's different about us? It's our incredible artists, combined with the passion translation. Here's an example of how the passion inspires. You have supercharged my life so that I can soar again like a flying eagle in the sky, from Psalm 103. We publish greeting cards in convenient 12-packs. It's like having a card shop in your own home. So every time you need a card, you have them handy. So visit gracefully-yours.com to buy greeting cards, where art and message connect to your heart.
Hey, and welcome back to Success Made to Last Legends. I'm Rick Tokini. Today on our show, we've got one of my favorite authors of all time. It's Brian Tracy. And before we give the introduction of Brian, I want to thank our mutual friend, Bob Huey, who introduced me to Mr. Tracy. And Brian is considered a legendary author, not just by me, but by, I think, the at least 28 other countries that have published your books, over 80 books. And his writing is highly regarded because it's based on extensive experience as a consultant, a trainer, and motivational speaker. I would also say, Brian, I read it because it is the greatest dose of common sense that I can get in a very, in a world that's not commonsensical anymore. I'm so proud that we can honor you today on Legends. Welcome, sir.
Well, thank you, Rick. It's a pleasure to be with you and to be with our friends. You know, the people who listen to this program are people who are ambitious. And Harvard University did a study on what are the key requirements for success. And the number one requirement for success is ambition, is people are hungry. They want to be successful. They want to learn how to do things better and to do more of them. And so people listening to this are those types of people. And those are the ones who are the movers and shakers who drive the future of our country. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, sir. While we're on that topic, would you mind commenting on kind of giving us a state of the union on ambition, not only in the United States, but perhaps globally? Where do you think ambition stands today?
Well, ambition requires self-confidence. It requires goals. It requires hard work. It means that you want to be more and have more and do more. And without that ambition, without that desire, you know, Napoleon Hill, the great success author, said the number one requirement for success is desire, burning desire for improving yourself and your situation. And you have to have that because you're going to experience an enormous number of setbacks and delays and temporary failures. And if you don't have this burning ambition to go over them and keep going and keep going, then you'll quit. And about 80% of the population has basically given up. They kind of go to work and they talk to their friends about 50% of the time. And then they go out for drinks and they go home and watch TV. and they wonder why their lives don't get better. And then they say, well, it's the rich people. That's why I'm not successful. Well, every rich person was once a poor person, and as a result of hard work for a long time. To be successful, you know, be prepared to put in 20 years to learn it, and because you're competing with an enormous number of smart, ambitious, and driven people, and for you to get forward in this great marathon race of society, you're going to have to be in there and running for long periods of time. But if you're really determined, then you will find the way through. It's the most amazing darn thing. It's almost like they talk about the waters parting for Moses. Mm-hmm. Is the difficulties and problems that they'll part for you, and you'll get an opportunity to go forward. And many times it will be completely different from what you set out to do. Yeah. Here's a great story, by the way. Steve Jobs, you know, was fired from Apple. He went out and he started Pixar. And he built another $6 billion corporation. And they were having all kinds of problems. They brought in a couple of top executives from Fortune 500 companies, but the company was floundering. And so they brought him in. They asked him if he would just walk around and see people and walk around and talk to people. And he said, well, you might do more of this and less of that and so on. And then they came to him and said, would you like to come back in as the president? And he said, sure. And he did. And he immediately called a meeting. And the question he asked is, how many products do we have here at Apple? Turned out they had 104 products. They were drowning in minutiae, and they were going broke. And not only that, he said, how much money do we have? He said, we have enough money to last for 2 months. Then the company's bankrupt. And so he said, we've got to do something. We've got to find another product or service. And he had this idea of a phone that had everything in it. And to develop it would take years and years and years. And he found that Nokia, who had 50% of the world market for cell phones, Nokia had developed this phone, this iPhone sort of thing, and had decided not to bring it to market because it would interfere with their existing sales. So his people went over to talk to the Nokia people and said, can we buy the patents from you? And they said, oh, sure, we don't want them. We're not going to use them. So they bought the patents from Nokia. They didn't invent the iPhone. They just bought the patents, brought them back, and cleaned it up, put smooth corners on it, and released it, and sold a billion of them, and became, they say now, maybe the first trillion-dollar company in the world. And then he looked at the 104 products, and he said, we want to cut these products down to 4. Well, everybody had a heart attack because they had invested their lives in creating and selling these useless products. And what they did, they cut it down to 4 products and then introduced the iPhone. And the rest is history. And that, as I said, they're saying now that Apple may become the first trillion-dollar company in history. And it was all completely different, different direction, different product, different service, different everything from what they had set off to do. And it's this thing with you. Is whatever you're doing now, you have to be open to the possibility that it could be the wrong thing. And the way that you can tell is you're struggling, is you're basically going upstream, you're struggling to make enough money to make a living. I've got all kinds of talents and intelligence and ability and experience and everything else. It's sort of like a cannon. You can move the cannon and you can shoot it in any direction. You can shoot yourself in any direction. So if it's not working, be open. And here's one of the most important things, is open to the possibility that you could be wrong. Always be open to the possibility that you could be wrong, because people are so adamant about being right. I want to be right. I have to be right. I have to explain it in such a way that I'm right. No, not necessarily. You're going to be wrong most of the time. Drucker said you'll be wrong 4 out of 5 times. And so what you do is, when you realize that it's not working, is stop it, do something else. Stop it, do something else, until you find something that works. And when that works, then you run with it. Like a football player runs for yards. They pick up a fumble and they fumble and they run for it. That's what you do. You run for it. But you keep on playing. You keep on playing, hitting knockdown, playing a knockdown. And finally, you're going to get the ball and you're going to get an open field. and you're going to make more progress in 1 year than you may have made in 10. But you just have to believe that that's true, and it will be true for you.
That's right. And to that end, Brian, in your book, Eat That Frog, you talk about the importance of overcoming procrastination. So let's play like you're the doctor today of all American enterprises and the next generation of people out there working, all the people creating new content for the future. And you say, it's 8 o'clock on Monday morning. Here's what I want you to do relative to great working habits and procrastination. What do you want to tell them?
Well, first of all, write it down. I'm adamant about this. If you don't write things down, you have no chance to be successful. Writing things down straightens them out and clarifies them in your own mind. So make a list of everything that you have to do today. And I say, make the list the night before. The last thing you do at the end of the workday or on Sunday is write a list of everything that you have to do in the coming days and weeks. All right. Number two is imagine that you're going to be called out of town for a month and you can only do one thing on your list. And so go over the list, say, what is the one thing that will make the greatest contribution that will help me and my company more than anything else if I do it and complete it and do it well? And go over the list, and it will usually pop out at you, usually very clear. I'm talking to your coworker and so on. The one task, start off every day with one completed task, and it'll change your life forever. It's such a simple thing, but when I discovered it, I went literally from rags to riches. I went from struggling to be a millionaire and then a multimillionaire. It's so simple, and yet it's the hardest thing in the world to make a habit. Once you have a habit of starting and completing your most important task, you are going to be a big success. But here's the biggest payoff. When you complete a task, it's like crossing a finish line first. When you complete a task, it gives you a surge of energy, enthusiasm, endorphins, and it makes you feel happy. And so people who are starting and completing tasks are happy all the time. They feel great about themselves. They're enthusiastic. They're positive. Starting and completing important tasks transforms your life. And so I wrote that up in a book, and I wrote 21 different ways to do it. We called it Eat That Frog. And the book became the best-selling book on time management in the world in 55 languages.
Amen to that. And I want to ask you something, though, that leads up to that, because, and I'll briefly tell you that in 1978, I went to work for Procter & Gamble. They taught me to focus on that one thing and to spend planning time on Sunday nights. So at 8 o'clock on Monday, I would go out and do that one thing effectively. Talk about the importance of a time of reflection and proper planning so you can get your mind around that one thing.
Yes. Procter & Gamble is famous for breeding successful people who then go on to run major Fortune 500 companies, because they start off as can-do executives. They get the job done. So you have a company that's floundering, hire one of the executives from Procter & Gamble. They know how to drive this company forward. And so that's great. It's not as if I originated these ideas. I've always said, people say, do you feel you're a creator? I say, no, I'm a synthesizer. I take ideas from every single source and synthesize them into a different but usable form.
I would say that message that Brian just said is universal and timeless. I don't care if you're Generation A, Z, Millennial, B, G, whatever the alphabet is out there. That is a universal truth. And I want to, before we cut to commercial, I want you to say a few words about your book, Maximum Achievement, because I think that you are one of the great evangelists of all time when it comes to how to continue success and continue to win year after year after year. It's not this little dose. It's about long-term sustainability of success.
Yes. Well, maximum achievement is considered by people all over the world to be the very best, most important, and most helpful success book ever written. For many years, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill was the Bible for success, and it is still an absolutely excellent book to read. My book takes everything that's in Think and Grow Rich plus 100 years of experience and puts it all together into a system of 12 chapters, and this system will transform your life. People go, I received a phone call not long ago, and it was from the secretary to a Russian billionaire, one of the richest men in the world. He's worth about $6-8 billion. And they asked, could you, would you be available to meet with my boss? And I said, sure. And it started off an incredible adventure. He had bought the most expensive condominium in the world in Monte Carlo, and it cost $300 million. And he, adjacent to this condominium, was a five-star hotel, one of the great hotels of Europe. And he bought the hotel too, so people who visited him could stay in the hotel. So they arranged for me to come and spend a full day with this Russian billionaire who didn't speak English. And he told me his story. His story was that after the Russian collapse of the Soviet Union, he was working in a hospital. He had a degree in medicine, but his job was being pushing a gurney, and he was making $200 a month. And he was pushing a gurney, and one day somebody gave him my book. My book was the first book that literally went ballistic in the Soviet Union. People bought it from one side. So he began to follow this book, and he found an entrepreneurial opportunity, and then another opportunity, and then another opportunity. He became the second biggest potash extractor and exporter in the world. Potash is a chemical that goes with other chemicals to make fertilizer. It's absolutely essential for life on Earth is potash. He became number two in potash. He made a fortune, and then his partners turned on him and accused him of criminal activity, and he was arrested, and the lawyers were paid off. The judges were paid off, and he was put in prison for several years, multi-year sentence. And they said, if you'll just agree that you committed these crimes and turn over your business to us, the oligarchs, then we'll let you out of prison. And he said, absolutely not. And he fought it from prison, got a lawyer, and they finally got it thrown out. But he sat in prison for a year fighting these bogus charges. And then you look at that, and every day they said, all you have to do is admit this fraudulent charge and we'll let you out. But he kept fighting and fighting, which he on one of the gurneys in the hospital in St. Petersburg. He began reading this book and his life changed forever. Now, that's only one of thousands of stories, just one of the best ones, because it's nice to think that a person can go from rags to $6 or $7 billion and attribute it to you. And so he spent the whole day with him. I charged him my fee, which is very high, and I spent the whole day with him, with the interpreter, just talking back and forth, like you and I, just talking back and forth. It was a great, great experience. And I visited him. He decided to come to New York, and he bought a townhouse on the top floor of an apartment building on Central Park, paid $95 million for it, so that he could have a place to stay when he visited New York. Most amazing darn thing. Here's this guy with nothing, and he just suddenly started to use more of his potential. And the more of his potential he used, the more he had. The smarter he became, the more opportunities came to him, and the more industries that he looked at and studied and made himself an expert on. Most amazing. He went out to Los Angeles and invested.
When you save on auto insurance for driving safe with USAA Safe Pilot, you'll feel like a big deal. Even in a traffic jam. Save up to 30% with USAA Safe Pilot. Restrictions apply.
What does making it actually mean? At the University of Texas at Austin's McComb School of Business, we think it means making it your own way and blazing your own trail. Whether you're starting an entrepreneurial venture based on the values that matter to you, innovating in fresh new ways within corporate America, or leading a nonprofit to new tiers of success, no matter the path your pursuits take you, you can make it here. Visit macombs.utexas.edu to find out how.
In in medical care and made another $1 billion funding startups in our medical system. Wonderful, wonderful story. And this possibility is for everyone, not to make $1 billion, mind you, but you can become a great success. There's a something that you and I have heard. It says, if you want to be successful, follow in the footsteps of the people who have been successful before. Find out what they did. They all started with nothing, and now they're rich. Then what you do is you, wherever you're starting, do what they did and do it over and over again until you master that skill. And surprise, surprise, here's a word that you should write on your hand, tattoo on your hand, and the word is results. Results. Peter Drucker said, everything in business is aimed at getting more and better results. Your income is determined by the quality and quantity of results that you get. So you have to ask yourself every minute of every day, is what I'm doing right now getting results that people will pay for? Is what I'm doing right now and chatting with your friends at work. Most people spend 50% of their time at work chatting with their friends. 50%. And then when they do work, they work on little, easy, unimportant tasks because the day is passing and they're looking forward to watching television. And they start and then talk all day about TV shows and things they're going to do on the weekend and so on. But not successful people. Successful people start work and they put their head down and they just hammer, hammer, hammer. And they work on getting the most important results possible now. Keep thinking results, results, results. And the more and better results you get, the better you get at getting more and better results, and the more you're paid. So you look at people who are earning a lot of money today, they're getting lots of results. And you can be the same. Is it easy? No, it's hard, which is why so few people do it. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to slack off, to waste time. But it's hard to keep your head down and work nonstop on your most important task until that becomes a habit. Then it becomes easier for you to do highly productive, valuable things than it ever was before. In fact, you become impatient. When I've had people come up to me in my seminars and say, you know, I found that I've lost my sense of humor. My coworkers say I'm no fun anymore because I don't hang around with them and BS. He said, all I think of when I go to work is getting the job done. And is there something wrong with me? I said, no. I said, now you develop the mindset of successful people and get results.
That's right. We are talking with the one and only Brian Tracy, author of over 80 books, especially Maximum Achievement. What a great story, Brian. Thanks for sharing that. And we're going to cut to commercial. And Brian wants me to tell you that you can go to Amazon.com to buy all of his books today and Audible to hear his books today. And we're not talking about just one book. I would recommend the entire library. But my favorites are Create Your Own Future, Flight Plan, Eat That Frog, Change Your Thinking, Change Your Life, and 10 Ways to Live a Wonderful Life. Those are my favorites. And we will be right back after this quick commercial, and we will return with our guest here on Legends, Brian Tracy.
Hello, I'm Heather Barnes, food and product photographer and storyteller behind the lens. Our Austin-based team is all about visual solutions. For your brand, it's essential for your product to be memorable and have stickiness. Our clients like Ghirardelli, Tiff's Treats, and Nautamu choose our photography to develop positive associations with their brand. They call our work inspiring because it moves consumers into a relationship with their company. And we can do the same for you. Learn more today at heatherbarnes.com. Focused on you, your story, and your success with memorable photography garnished with love.
Okay, we are back with our legend, Brian Tracy, and on the back half of this show, we're going to ask him some deeper philosophical questions or maybe some funny questions that you may not know about this guy. And let's start with this one. We've been studying smart collaborations recently, Brian. Off the top of your head, what is one of the smartest collaborations you've ever had in life?
Well, I'll give you a simple example. Hewlett-Packard. Hewlett-Packard booked me to speak for them all over the country for some years. And so I got to know them. And Hewlett-Packard started off with two guys out of the Army, David Packard and forget his name, Hewlett. And one guy was an engineer, and he came up with a breakthrough in engineering, a beautiful product, simple product. And then Packard, Dave Packard, went out and sold it. And they started in a basement in Silicon Valley, what is now Silicon Valley. And it's famous. You can actually go on the tour, and there's the tour. There's the little house. There's the little basement where Hewlett and Packard started one of the biggest companies in the world. And what they did is that Dave Packard was a sales guy. He's a marketing guy. So he went out and knocked on doors and sold the product. And Hewlett stayed back and made the product and made sure that it worked well. And that was the starting point of one of the greatest fortunes in American history. And you look at Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs. They started Apple together in a basement, mm-hmm. in a garage, also in the Silicon Valley area. So you find that you have to have someone who can sell the product. It can be the best product in the world, but you've got to have sales skills. And I have worked with more than a million salespeople, probably 2 or 3 million in 55 countries. And in every case where I teach them, this is how you sell. Selling is a process. It has a recipe like a dish in the kitchen. If you follow the recipe, you make sales. If you make sales, you make money. If you make money, you eventually make more and more money and you become rich. But if you can't sell, then you're absolutely dependent on having a partnership with someone who can sell. I can say sell like hell. Someone who can get out there and who loves to sell. Gets up in the morning. Now, people say, well, I don't like to sell and I don't like the rejection. I don't like the failure and the hard hours. Good. Then go home and suck eggs for the rest of your life, because you're not going to be successful if you can't sell your product or service. And so if you're not good at it, then get good at it. And this is why I used to give seminars all over America, 50, 60, 70 seminars, average attendance of 1,600 people. And I put together a seminar called The Psychology of Selling. And it's available in audio program. It's available in book. According to research, more people have become millionaires as salespeople using the psychology of selling than any other single influence. And I remember when I was starting off, Xerox was famous for their Xerox learning systems. They had a sales system that was supposed to work. Well, what happened was the sales system was to sell Xerography. And they had a patent, a worldwide patent on Xerography for several years. So therefore, people, if they wanted to make photocopies, had to buy the Xerox system. And so exactly. They thought, geez, we are great salespeople. We go into these companies and they buy our system. Well, they had either that or type it, punt and peck.
Yeah, so, what was the alternative? A carbon?
Then suddenly the alternative, carbon paper. That's right. In my early days, I used to sell carbon paper from office to office. And now, here's Xerox. They're the king of the world. And then the patents ran out, and the Japanese were waiting like buzzards on a lamppost. And they swooped in with a Ricoh and other machines that were better than Xerox, did far more things, were far cheaper. And Xerox darn near went bankrupt. They couldn't believe it. The sales were just coming in with no effort at all. And so the Xerox people, who treated me poorly because they had the best sales system in the world, and suddenly the Xerox people are sending their people to my seminars because now they have to learn how to sell. Before, they were order takers, and you had no choice. Either buy Xerox or type it yourself. And it's the same worldwide. People have struggled, and then they learn how to sell. It's like a recipe. Now, you probably have, Rick, you probably have a dish that you like to prepare at home in the kitchen.
I do.
It's a dish that you maybe learned it from your mother, or you tasted it and you
got a recipe
and you made it. And so every so often, sometimes your family asks, hey, Dad, can you make that dish for us? Because it's really delicious. We really like it. And for me, it's Caesar salad. I am one of the world's experts on Caesar salad. I make a Caesar salad that'll knock your eyeballs out. You'll cry afterwards because it's so good. And the reason I made the salad was I used to go out to restaurants because I could get a Caesar salad. And one day I looked at the waiter who was making the Caesar salad next to the table. And I realized this guy's not that smart. How could he make such a great Caesar salad? And it's simple. He just follows the recipe given to him by the cook in the kitchen and just mixes it up right there, puts the ingredients exactly as they're specified. And the Caesar salad is delicious. I said, I can do this. So I went home and I bought recipes and I got a salad bowl. I did all the things. And it was a disaster at the beginning. But after a few weeks, I could make a Caesar salad that was make you cry. It's so delicious. If you like Caesar salad. Well, it's the same thing in selling, you start off and you won't be good at it. I started off knocking on doors. I used to knock on 70 doors. I used to keep track, 70 doors a day, 70 doors a day. And I'd get 69 rejections. Knock on doors, rejection, 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 rejection. And then 68 rejections and then 67 rejections. And finally, I started to sell professionally. And I only called on people who were ready to buy. It was the most amazing damn thing. And you can do the same thing. You can learn any skill you need to learn to achieve any goal that you can set for yourself. People think, well, these people, they're brilliant. They have some kind of genetic superiority. That's why they're so successful. No, everyone started at the bottom. I used to say to my audiences, I said, your job is to be in the top 20%. Why? Because that's where the money is. There's no money in the bottom 80%. And everybody in the top 20% started where? Where did they start? Started in the bottom 20%. And then they started to do certain things in a certain way and mastered the skill. And now they're in the top 20%. And they live in a big house on the hill. They send their kids to private schools. And they go to Europe. They go to Switzerland and to Colorado on their ski vacations with their families, as I did. I mean, it was the most amazing darn thing. No money, nothing, struggling. But you can get to the top if you are determined to get to the top. And you can learn anything you need to learn to be successful.
Indeed, you can. Hey, Brian, we're going to wrap up today's show, and I want to get your comment on this. Over the last several years, and it's mostly been since my mom and dad passed away, started to recognize that what is most important in life, is it success with digits in your bank account, or is it significance? And I read recently and had a chance to interview this neurologist, Dr. Jay Lombard, who actually has identified the place in your brain where there's a purpose and an intention. And he's also helped me understand what the word significance means, which is really to give back. It's a marker. It puts a value on what are we leaving behind in this big world. And I'm wondering if you would give us your definition today and your perspective on success versus significance.
Well, it's a great, great definition. I've worked with that for 20 or 30 years. I think the most important thing in life is your relationships. It's your spouse and your children. Must never lose track of that. The reason you're working is for them, is so that you can help them to enjoy a good life. And so when they find that people who have good marriages live 10 years longer than people who have poor marriages. So therefore, never forget, I'm 79 now, and I started off selling when I was 10. Believe it or not, most important thing in my life is my wife and my four children. And now second, significance means that you make a difference in the lives of others. You contribute to the lives of others so that before they met you, they were one person. After they met you and were subject to your influence, either something you read or something you said, they were a different person. They saw life differently. And one of the things, little things like people say, well, I have to work all the time in order to be successful. People say, I have the luxury of being able to work at something I enjoy and I'm good at, and I can be successful. In other words, reframe your situation and say the most important thing in life is making a difference in the lives of others, starting at home and then moving out from there. It's interesting because as your life comes to a close, is the people around your bed are going to be your family, the people that you really worked hard to make their life important. My greatest goal, my greatest value in life, I had a good friend, a very smart guy, a publisher from New York. He came to my office once and we were talking, and he said, right now, he said, I'm working on values. He said, so I have a question for you. And I never forgot this. I had him come in and speak to my class. I had a class of people learning how to speak professionally. And he gave us a little talk, and the talk was, identify your most important value in life. What is your most important value in life? Because at the core of your being are your values. Your values determine how you think and feel and act and what you do and so on. And so we all talked about that, and I concluded that my greatest value was freedom. Freedom. And what that meant is that I had the resources and the ability to be free, to make my own choices, to do what I believe was important. And if you look back in history, you find that the United States was founded by people whose primary value was freedom.
Yes,
and the entire American system is designed so people are free to be everything that they can possibly be. That's why we have people from 170 countries come to America with nothing except the chance to be free to utilize their potential and their abilities. And many people who are born here don't realize this is the greatest gift you can have in the whole world. I've traveled in 124 countries. I've spoken professionally to large audiences in 84 countries. And all of these people dream of going to America, even with nothing, and having a chance to be free to realize and utilize their full potential. So freedom is my greatest value. And so I make freedom available to my spouse and to my children. And I teach people how to be free. I teach people how to be successful and productive and valuable and important and accomplish their goals. And as a result, they feel happy and they pass it on to other people.
And that, my friends, is a great definition of significance, because you're making that ripple effect of happiness. Brian, it's been an honor to honor you today. Thank you so much for your time, and thank your wife for her technical support this morning. And we really appreciate you and hope that you'll come back on again.
Thank you. And let me leave our listeners with one of the most important statements that is part of my life, and it's the statement, I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. So no matter what happens in life, to say to yourself, if you want it, it means there's a seed of a desire inside of you, and forget all the obstacles and just say, I can do it. I can do it. And if you want to be a great manager, a great leader, a great father or mother, tell your children, you can do it. You can do it. No limits. You can do it. I can do it. You can do it. That's the most wonderful, liberating feeling of all, is I can do anything I put my mind to.
What a great
and
wrap
you,
up.
You, my friends.
I can do it. I can.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Tracy. We appreciate you. And again, thanks again to Bob Huey for the introduction. And as we always say here, we wish you a successful life on your way to significance. Have a great week.
What does making it actually mean? At the University of Texas at Austin's McComb School of Business, we think it means making it your own way and blazing your own trail. Whether you're starting an entrepreneurial venture based on the values that matter to you, innovating in fresh new ways within corporate America, or leading a nonprofit to new tiers of success. No matter the path your pursuits take you, you can make it here. Visit mccombs.utexas.edu to find out how.